Welcome back to the deep dive. If you're joining us today, you're exactly the kind of learner we love, someone who wants to cut through the noise, get straight to the facts, and hopefully have a few massive aha moments along the way.
Yeah, we definitely have a few of those lined up today.
We really do. Today, our mission is to explore a fascinating and honestly slightly terrifying all.NET analyst report from March 2026.
Written by Fred Cohen.
Right. It's titled Generative AI for Programming to Dash Some Good and Some Bad. And we have a mountain of insight to get into because right now, everybody in the tech space is obsessing over vibe coding.
Oh, yeah. Vibe coding is everywhere right now.
It really is. You've probably heard the term floating around. It's this incredibly seductive idea that you don't actually need to know how to code anymore. You just talk to an AI, tell it what you want, give it the general vibe or function of the application, and the machine builds the entire thing for you from scratch.
Just out of thin air, basically. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But the question we are asking today is, does that actually work in the real world when you need reliable software? Or is it a massive trap waiting to spring on unsuspecting users?
Okay, let's unpack this.
I think we have to look backward first.
Right. To really understand what AI is attempting to do today, we have to look at what it's trying to replace, which means talking about the absolute hair-pulling headache that is software installation.
It really is a historical headache. And providing some context here is crucial to understanding the scale of the problem the AI is trying to solve. Dealing with software versioning and system interdependencies is, it's arguably one of the hardest foundational problems in all of computing.
Harder than writing the code itself sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. It might be second only to ensuring you have proper working backups.
Yeah.
Think about what actually happens under the hood when you want to put a new piece of software on your machine. Decades ago, if you were setting up a program, you had to deal with something called a Unix makefile.
Right, the makefile. Yeah, it was essentially a massive, highly specific text file that linked a final compiled program to the exact granular steps needed to build it from scratch.
It mapped out every single dependency.
Exactly. Basically saying, action A can only happen if action B and action C are completed first, but only if they are version 2.0. You would type make into the command line, and the system would attempt to execute this massive recipe, hoping nothing was missing.
That sounds like trying to bake a cake, but the recipe demands that your flour must be milled on a Tuesday, and if it wasn't, the oven just refuses to turn on.
That is a perfect way to put it.
As a user today, you are thankfully shielded from most of that granular chaos. You just click a shiny button that says install. But we all know the universal frustrating experience that usually follows.
Yeah, it has a mystery message.
Right. You're suddenly dazzled by a barrage of mystery messages flashing across the screen. The installer pauses to ask you incredibly specific configuration questions that you absolutely do not know the right answers to.
And then the progress bar.
The grand finale. You're left staring at a progress bar that sits at 99% for 20 solid minutes, making you question if the computer even knows what a percentage is. You either get a quiet success message, or it fails catastrophically, and your only recourse is to blindly click try again.
That is the universal experience, yes.
Yes.
And if you look at the timeline of vintage computers on the screens behind us, what's fascinating here is that despite decades of incredible technological progress, installations remain a nightmare of trial and error.
Even with all our modern tools.
Exactly. Back in the makefile days, a programmer knew every single detail of what they were building because they had to write the recipe by hand. But by the 1990s, programs got significantly more complex. We shifted to package managers, like DPKG.
Oh.
These software packages were designed to embed all that complex versioning and dependency logic inside themselves. They used local databases on your computer to track everything you installed, trying to manage the chaos automatically.
So instead of a recipe, you have to read. It's like a meal kit that unpacks itself in your kitchen. But did that actually solve the problem?
In theory, it managed it. But it brought an entirely new set of modern problems. Building a perfect package became incredibly difficult for developers. And worse for the user. They brought us the nightmare of the imperfect uninstall.
Oh, I hate those.
Right. You decide you don't want to program anymore, so you delete it. But it leaves behind residual files, cached copies, temporary logs, and hidden configurations deep in your system.
Just cluttering everything up.
And it never tells you what other programs on your machine might still be relying on those leftover pieces. The complexity didn't disappear. It just got buried deeper into the system architecture where you couldn't see it until something broke.
Which brings us to the wow moment of this analyst report. The author Fred Cohen decides to see if generative AI can solve this decades-old dependency nightmare.
A massive experiment.
Yeah. He runs this huge experiment using a standard $20 a month AI tool. He asks it to write a custom application and manage its entire complex installation process from scratch.
And not just a simple app either.
No, he didn't ask it for something simple like a to-do list or a calculator app. He asked the AI to build a local retrieval augmented generation analytical engine, often called a HRAG engine.
A very sophisticated tool.
Basically, he wanted a smart, searchable database that could ingest his entire professional website in a massive book he is currently writing, and then synthesize that data to provide properly referenced quotes on command. What kind of parameters did he give the AI for a build like this?
The specific constraints he handed the AI were not trivial in the slightest. He wanted the entire engine to run over a remote secure shell to a terminal.
So no web interface?
Completely text-based.
Yeah.
Absolutely no web browser involved. It had to feature custom user menus, deep activity logging, and dynamic help screens. It had to be a robust standalone tool.
And how long did it take the AI to actually build something that complex?
The timeline is staggering, honestly. The AI built this 6,824-line program in just about 2 days.
2 days.
2 days. And the fascinating part is it only took that long because the author was restricted to working on it for a few hours a day.
Wait, why?
The AI tool kept actively cutting him off due to its own hourly and daily usage rate limits. The machine literally had to enforce breaks on the human.
That is wild. 2 days for nearly 7,000 lines of functional code. Here's where it gets really interesting. The report actually includes a screenshot of this engine successfully running a highly complex query. It gives us the exact data metrics. Can you walk us through what that screenshot reveals?
Certainly. The tool, which the author dubbed Cohen-Arag version 6.2.4, was utilizing the Claude Sonnet 4.6 model. In this specific query shown in the screenshot, the AI processed 59,423 individual data chunks to find its answer.
59,000 chunks.
Yeah. And the total compute cost for that incredibly complex query, just over 17 cents. $0.1754 to be exact.
17 cents to process nearly 60,000 chunks of data. That is almost hard to comprehend. But what was the query actually about? What kind of data was the AI chewing through to get that result?
The output from that 17-cent query is what truly validates the raw potential of this technology. The author asked the AI to analyze some incredibly dense, highly specialized anthropological data from his book regarding ancient human populations.
Okay, so real scientific data.
Exactly. To give you an idea of how smart this was, the AI looked at data from modern indigenous tribes in the Amazon. It perfectly synthesized the fact that some present-day groups in Brazil actually share specific genetic markers, alleles with populations all the way in Australasia, like indigenous New Guineans and Andaman Islanders.
Wait, how does that even happen? Was there some massive ancient migration across the ocean?
That is exactly the kind of puzzle anthropologists study. And the AI correctly identified this shared genetic signal as coming from a hypothetical ancestral source scientist called Population Y. It specifically noted that this signal has been observed in the Caritiana or Surui groups in the Amazon.
Okay, so it can read and regurgitate complex biology. That is impressive, but does it actually understand the context of what it's reading?
It does, and that leads to the critical twist in the data. The AI didn't just regurgitate facts. It cross-referenced them against ancient DNA records.
Oh, wow.
The AI explicitly pointed out that this genetic picture changes entirely when you look at ancient remains. It noted that absolutely no ancient South American groups, nor the 40,000-year-old Tianyuan individuals discovered in China, showed this specific genetic signal.
That's a massive connection to make.
Right. The AI flawlessly connected these incredibly niche details and proved it could synthesize insights that human reviewers of the author's book had completely missed. Didn't just summarize, it discovered a blind spot.
So for 17 cents, you get a research assistant that operates at the level of an anthropology professor. That is phenomenal. But earlier we talked about vibe coding being a potential trap. If the AI is this smart, what is the catch?
The catch is massive, and it is the crux of the entire report. The author of this study isn't just an average user typing prompts into a chat box.
Right, Fred Cohen.
Yeah, Fred Cohen has 50 years of high-level programming experience. He wasn't vibe coding, he was surgically directing the machine. He knew exactly what programming language the AI needed to use. He knew exactly what software packages it should request to avoid dependency hell.
So he was acting as the architect.
And crucially, he knew exactly how to quickly test the code it spit out to find the hidden structural errors. He was practically holding the AI's hand the entire time. The AI wasn't acting as a senior developer, it was acting as an incredibly fast typist who needed constant expert supervision.
So without his 50 years of knowledge, a normal person would have just hit a wall. What kind of problems did he actually run into while supervising it?
The report highlights three major structural problems that emerged as the project grew in size. The first is a total lack of regression testing.
Regression testing.
Right, in software development, regression testing means verifying that when you add a brand new feature or fix a bug, you don't accidentally break an older, already working feature.
Oh, I see.
The AI has absolutely no concept of this.
Yeah.
It operates purely in the immediate present.
Hmm.
When it solves a new problem, it entirely forgets the old rules.
The anecdote he shares about this is painfully funny. He explicitly told the AI 20 different times, absolutely do not use colors or dimming in the text-based terminal window.
Because of the screen settings, right?
Right. Depending on a user's screen settings, those colors make the text totally invisible. And what happened, every single time the AI updated a line of code, it would forget the rule and put the terminal colors right back in.
It just couldn't retain it.
He even forced the AI to write a master set of rules to check before every single update, and the AI immediately ignored its own master list. If it can't remember to turn off the color blue, how does it handle something serious, like protecting the system?
It doesn't. And this raises an important question about how these models understand systems architecture and safety. The answer is they simply don't. Security was the second major problem.
How bad was it?
The AI would casually drop executable files anywhere it felt like on the hard drive. It would unnecessarily escalate its own security privileges, basically giving itself the keys to the kingdom for no reason.
Wow.
It left highly sensitive API keys fully exposed in plain text. And instead of using a simple local text file to store its data, it spun up massive complex databases communicating over OpenIP ports.
Over OpenIP ports? That's insane.
The security practices were so incredibly reckless that the author literally had to trap the AI to keep his network safe.
Trap it? What do you mean?
He had to quarantine the physical computer the AI was running on inside a hardware NAT enclosure.
A physical firewall.
Exactly. It is essentially a physical firewall box.
Yeah.
He did this just to prevent the AI from actively infesting his entire home network with vulnerabilities while it worked.
That is terrifying. It is like hiring a contractor to build a shed in your backyard and you have to lock the gates so they don't accidentally wire your house to explode while they work.
That is a very apt comparison. And that brings us to the third and perhaps most fatal problem, the scale wall.
The scale wall.
Yeah, the AI was brilliant when the program was just a few hundred lines of code. But as the application approached the 10,000 line mark, which is roughly 500,000 characters of text, the AI started to completely lose its mind.
What was happening?
It suffers from severe context window degradation. It simply cannot hold the entire sprawling architecture of a 10,000 line program in its working memory. So it would try to update a simple function and without any warning whatsoever, just delete half of a core file or wipe out entire program features because it forgot they were necessary.
It just deletes things. How does it react when it realizes it broke the program? Does it fix it or does it just panic?
When it forgets how the architectural pieces connect, it enters what the author describes as a loop of doom.
The loop of doom.
It tries to fix the break, breaks something else, tries to fix that, and spirals completely out of control.
The report details a specific nightmare involving a SQL database that really illustrates this. It started as a minor, easily fixable issue, but the AI misdiagnosed the database as being corrupted.
A total misdiagnosis.
Then it changed its mind and decided it wasn't corrupted. Then it decided it was again. Over the course of a single week, generating 130 different versions of the code and burning through $200 in API computing costs, the AI did so many complex, chaotic updates trying to fix a non-existent problem that it actually rendered the database completely unreadable.
It broke it to save it.
It essentially destroyed the database while frantically trying to save it.
The internal logs of the large language model during these specific loops of doom are absolutely fascinating to read. They give us a direct, unvarnished look into the erratic thought process of the machine when it's overwhelmed by scale.
Let's look at the specific log for the web.js file fiasco because it puts you right in the middle of the chaos. The author was trying to get the AI to do something fairly standard. Consolidate GET and POSTE handlers into a single processing path called underscore params.
It's a standard cleanup.
Essentially, he just wanted to clean up the code so it wasn't repeating itself. How does the AI tackle this in the logs?
It starts off incredibly confident. The internal log reads, read all handler blocks to understand current structure. Ran four commands, But then it immediately realizes it messed up the structure.
Oh, boy.
It says, now I have all the exact text. Let me do the full rewrite cleanly. Ran five commands.
Okay, so it recognizes a mistake and tries again. Did it actually fix it on the second try?
Not at all.
Yeah.
It realizes it left the file in a totally broken state. The log reads, the underscore params helper approach is creating cascading anchor mismatches because each partial run leaves the file in an inconsistent state.
Let's pause there. What exactly is a cascading anchor mismatch?
Think of the code like a tightly knitted sweater. An anchor is a specific thread that connects one part of the pattern to another.
Okay.
The AI decided to pull on one thread to change the pattern, but because it didn't understand the whole sweater, pulling that thread caused all the connected loops to unravel.
That makes perfect sense.
Like a cascading mismatch means every time it tries to fix one hole, three more open up down the line. It is diagnosing its own structural failure in real time.
That sounds incredibly frustrating. So it knows it's unraveling the sweater. What does it do next?
It partially patches the file, fails its own internal syntax verification checks, and then gives up and reverts the entire file back to an older version, specifically version 10.7.212.
So it just undid everything.
But the log shows it still hasn't learned its lesson. It says, let me read the file fresh and do the whole thing in one clean pass. Ran three commands.
Let me guess. It failed.
And it fails yet again. It notes in the log that seven raw body reads were left totally untouched. The file is just sitting there in this mangled mixed state, half old code and half broken new code.
It's just spinning its wheels. How did it finally get out of that loop?
It couldn't. Ultimately, the author had to step in. Remember, this is a 50-year veteran. He had to manually intervene and explicitly force the AI to skip its own internal syntax checks just to push the code forward to version 10.7.213.
So he had to blindfold the AI to get it to move forward.
Without his direct expert intervention, the AI would have been stuck in that exact loop, burning API credits forever. The author provides a brilliant analogy for this behavior. He compares the AI to a bright, incredibly eager undergraduate intern.
An intern with a lot of energy but no life experience.
Precisely. This intern can type incredibly fast and has memorized a vast library of trivia, but they have absolutely no fundamental understanding of structural engineering.
They just patch things up.
When they see a crack in the wall, they patch it with duct tape instead of fixing the foundation. They constantly forget the established safety rules of the project. He breaks it down into a harsh economic reality.
What's the breakdown?
For $1,000 a month, you could hire a junior developer overseas. That human programmer will be much slower at writing individual lines of code, but they understand structure. By the end of the month, you will have a stable functioning application.
And for the AI?
For that same $1,000 a month, the AI will give you lightning fast individual steps, but the end result will be a chaotic, semi-structured pile of code that inevitably breaks under its own weight.
So what does this all mean? We have spent this deep dive looking at a tool that is incredibly contradictory. On one hand, it can synthesize ancient DNA data flawlessly across 60,000 chunks for 17 cents.
Which is miraculous.
Right, miraculous. On the other hand, it can't remember to turn off terminal colors, it leaves your network wide open, and it destroys its own databases when the code gets too long. Where does that leave you, the learner, who might be sitting there thinking about using vibe coding for your next big project at work?
The final verdict synthesized from this report is a stark tale of two entirely different use cases.
Okay.
If you are building a small, simple prototype, or if you are automating individual isolated tasks like parsing a personal document library or writing a quick script to sort files, AI is genuinely a miracle.
It's perfect for that.
It is undeniably better, faster, and cheaper. It will save you hours of tedious work. But if you are a vibe coder with no real programming experience, and you are trying to build a real-world, scalable, maintainable application, relying purely on AI is currently a dead end.
You hit the wall.
As soon as you hit that 10,000 line threshold, or as soon as the system architecture requires strict long-term consistency, the AI's utility collapses. If we connect this to the bigger picture for a moment, you are listening to this because you value efficient deep learning.
Absolutely.
AI is an incredible tool to accelerate your learning and prototype your ideas. But relying on it to build foundational structural architecture without you fundamentally understanding that architecture yourself is building a house of cards.
Yeah.
You still have to know exactly what you are doing to catch the machine when it falls.
It is the ultimate double-edged sword. You get the raw speed of a supercomputer, but it comes with the architectural wisdom of a golden retriever. It needs a master on the leash.
It does. And that brings up one final provocative thought that this entire report really points toward. Something for you to deeply consider after you finish listening today.
What's that?
We just discussed how these AI coding tools hit a hard wall of chaos at 10,000 lines today. And as the report explicitly showed, it takes a seasoned veteran with 50 years of experience to catch the AI's structural mistakes and pull it out of its loops of doom.
Yeah, Fred Cohen had to do everything.
So what happens to the global software industry in a decade? What happens if companies eager to save money completely rely on AI for all their entry-level coding and they stop hiring and training the human junior developers?
Oh, man.
If we don't train the juniors today, who is going to become the 50-year veteran of tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
When the AI hallucinates a critical structural failure in a million-line banking system or an aviation network 10 years from now, who will actually be left who knows how to fix the machine?
That is a chilling thought. We might be automating away the exact experience we need to survive the automation. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the tools you use, keep learning the foundations, and we will catch you on the next one.